Ramblings of an Old Woman. My daughter is here with me laughing her butt off because we're trying something new. This episode, we're going to talk about, actually, she's going to talk about what it was like with having a parent with cancer and the feelings and emotions that, and the things you think about as she was going through it with me. So, I'd like y'all to welcome Lacey. Yay! So, Lacey, tell us a little bit about what you felt like when, your mom told, or I told you that I had cancer. What was going through your mind?
Oh, God. There was a lot. It was a lot of information all at once. I think it was more like giving support and trying not to like freak out about the diagnosis itself, because, you know, anytime somebody hears the word cancer, they automatically like, you know, it freaks you out. It's a scary subject, and, you know, it's not really something that people talk about unless you experience it. So it was scary, and, you know, it was like not something that I thought that I was ever going to have to deal with, you know, because you really don't, you try not to think about things like that.
Yeah, the scary stuff.
Yeah, when it comes to your parents. But, no, I just really wanted to try to be supportive in the best way that I could, because I knew that it was hard for you and that you were going to have a lot on your plate and that it was going to be a struggle and a battle to go through. So I just wanted to be as supportive as I could.
Well, what was it like when you saw me with no hair and after the actual chemo treatment? The downside of it, you know, the looks of it. How did that make you feel?
I think that you never really looked sick until your hair was completely gone. Because I know that you started losing your hair after your first round of chemo, and it was a pretty significant loss. And I knew it was going to be something that was going to hit really hard with you, because your hair, not necessarily was your hair part of your identity, but it wasn't ever something that you thought you were going to have to lose. Yeah, so yeah. It's hard to, that's rude. It's hard to prepare yourself for that kind of thing, I guess. I'm going to turn that off for now. So I think it was like, I don't know how to explain it. The only way that I can explain it is that like, when you close your eyes and you imagine what somebody looks like, or what you like your parent looks like, your mom or your dad or whoever it may be, you close your eyes and like you have an image in your head that you think of when you think of that person. And so seeing you without your hair,
It was weird.
It wasn't, you know, because I was there when it happened, uh-huh. And I was able to see the transition that took place. It wasn't as shocking, but I think that if I hadn't, like, seen you, I think that it would have been more of a shock. I think that, like, if I was in, like, Brandon's situation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, like, not, like, being there every day and, like, seeing how it was transpiring, that I think it would have been more... it would have been harder to handle.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think you losing your hair was the biggest part of it for me, because to me it's just hair.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, yeah. You know, you never really walked around without, you know, a cap on or whatever it was that you were wearing. You know, you never really...
trusty stocking hat.
Yeah. You never really let anybody, like, see you in that light.
Yeah.
Which I think that's a personal choice. I don't think anybody should be able to dictate to you how you present yourself when you're going through something like that. I think whatever makes you comfortable and whatever makes you, I don't know, I guess happy in that situation is what really matters.
So what was it like, did the grandkids ever talk about grandma being sick and how she looked, and I mean, did it affect them in any way?
You know, not really. I think it's because we kind of sat down. They didn't, you know, they didn't really understand what cancer was. They just knew that you were sick. And so trying to explain to them, you know, like, grandma has cancer, you know, her hair is going to fall out. She might get skinny. She might not feel well all the time. You know, it was like, for them, they were kind of like, okay. They didn't really understand why, because they don't really understand what cancer is. You know, they don't, they're still too young. Layton never talked about it. Kinsley was more apt to talk about things, you know, because she likes to talk through things.
Yeah, yeah.
And she likes to be able to understand what's happening. So I think of the first times that we had really come face-to-face with it with her was, I don't remember if she saw a video or if she watched a movie or something, but she had asked me, or maybe it was after your hair fell out, I'm not sure, but she asked me, she said, you know, Mom, Grandma has cancer. And I said, well, yeah. And she goes, does that mean she's going to die? And so for me, it was like, okay, well, how do I explain to an 8-year-old that just because somebody has this disease doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to die? So, you know, I told her, I said, well, not right now. she's not going to die anytime soon. I said, she's taking medicine, and the medicine makes her kind of sick, and it makes it look worse than it really is. I said, so, you know, you don't have to worry about that. And I think that was probably her biggest fear, is that she was going to lose you, and she didn't really know how to cope with it because she was only 8.
Yeah, I remember when I was a little farther along and I was getting a little better, and we went over to Sam's Club, and she was like always wanting to hold my hand. Are you okay, Grandma? Are you okay?
Yeah.
I'll walk with you. I help you. And it's like, I think she's the mother hen type. So it was kind of nice to, you know, I leaned on her a little bit just so she felt like she was being helpful, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For an 8-year-old, it's a lot.
Yeah, she is a very empathetic person. Like, anytime that I'm upset or, you know, one of her friends is crying or whatever it is, like, anytime somebody's upset around her, you know, she's the first to be like, oh my God, are you okay? Like, do you need a hug? Like, you want me to hold you? And it's just like, it's just nice to see somebody that young to really, like, be able to empathize with you.
So what was it like when, how was Andy's thoughts on it? As far as, I know that he pulled away for a while. I think he was just having a hard time coming to terms with it too. But, you know, I just felt like, you know, he never wanted to come over with you. And how was that with him? I mean, was that anything that he talked about?
Andy's main concern when all of this was happening was being supportive for me,
mm-hmm.
because he knew that I was struggling with it. He has a weird relationship with death. in the sense that it doesn't affect him the same way it does other people, just because he's
been around it a lot.
Yeah. He's seen things and experienced things that have prepared him for things. And I also think maybe, he never really talked about it, but I think maybe it might have been difficult for him to see you like that. Because, you know, you and him are close, but, so I think it might have been difficult for him to see you like that.
Yeah,
you know,
I can see that.
You know, him and I have different experiences with losing a parent, and though we both have lost our dads, it was in dramatically different ways.
Oh, yeah.
So I think watching somebody decline and it happening quickly for him are very vastly different. You know, so I think his main concern was just he always plays the supportive role, and that's where he feels more comfortable in situations like that. He feels like he's best suited to stand back and kind of just be there when somebody needs him to be, rather than being in the front and unless directly asked for help. Or, you know, like, if you had asked him directly, like, will you do this for me, then he would have done it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I think that he knew that I was going to need support during that. So that's where he mainly stayed.
What was your spiritual relationship with God during that time? And be honest. I mean, you know.
Well,
I know we got different opinions on stuff, but, you know,
well, we're just different. We just believe in different things. You know, I look back at things like posts that I may have posted on Facebook or whatever it was like years ago, you know, about, my faith and where I was with God and my relationship with him. And then now where I'm at, now that I'm older, I kind of feel like, I don't know, it's hard to explain because, you know, your beliefs are more rooted in Christianity and my beliefs are rooted more in paganism. And so it's not that we don't believe the same things. It's just that we have different ways of believing them. You know, so where I believe that there isn't necessarily one, albeit entity that is in charge, as I believe that you are going to receive what you put out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm a true, true believer in karma. And I'm not saying that you got cancer because you have bad karma. I'm just saying, like, I believe that everything happens for a reason, and that's the universe's plan versus then just like one entity that wrote rules and laws. I think that the earth and the universe give us everything that we need to thrive and to survive, even as far as like retaining energy and like using, you know, herbal medicine and being more in tune with your own personal spirituality, like being close with yourself, rather than, I just don't believe that a book should dictate how I feel about things,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I truly believe that every person who is of sound body and mind, because there's people out there that are crazy, but that everybody truly believes and knows the difference between right and wrong. And when somebody tells you that something is wrong, but deep down inside you know that it's not, and that what they're saying is their agenda, and they're trying to put something else on you to make you believe that what you believe is wrong, I don't agree with that.
Kind of like the doctors do sometimes when they, you know, want to push something on you, like with my doctor, you know, wanting me to go do a double mastectomy, you know, and it's constantly pushed all the time, you know. You rebel, you know, kind of. Rebel, but you just kind of like, no, this
you
is
push
not.
Back.
Yeah, this is not what I want.
Because you feel like in your embodiment of who you are, you feel that that's not the right choice for you.
Right.
And there might come a day and there might come a time where that changes.
Right.
Where you say,
right.
Okay, maybe this is what I need to do. But I think at this point in time where you're at, you don't feel like it's a necessary thing. And I don't think it is either, but it's also not my choice.
Right, right.
You know, when you first got diagnosed, you were, you know, for a couple, I'm going to say like a couple solid hours, you were dead set on not getting treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you were like, absolutely not. I'm not doing this. I don't want to do this. It's just going to kill me. And then it was like, we had to talk you down, not so much talk you into doing treatment, but kind of we had to lay out a list of pros and cons for you. And I think maybe that helped you decide to do treatment. Because it's like, yes, can I live with this cancer for 10, 20 more years and be perfectly fine? Well, maybe not perfectly fine, but eventually it'll end up killing you. Whereas, why don't we treat it aggressively now and get rid of it? And it's, yeah, it's going to suck. For 365 days, every day of your life is going to suck. Like, you are going to feel like crap. Your hair is going to fall out. You're going to have surgery. Like, these are all things we knew were going to have to happen. But in the end, you look at that and that may have given you another 20 years. Versus if you had left it alone, you may have only gotten 2, 3, 5, 10, who knows how long you would have had.
True.
You know, and I think that they caught it early enough and they were able to treat it aggressively enough that it was going to give you more longevity.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, I think it's all in the bottom line of it, all the decisions that you make during this cancer diagnosis and the family and everything, it's all about choice. And what you feel. I mean, and that, I guess, you know, I went through so much, but I also hurt because I know you kids were hurting, you know, because it's like, it's hard. It's like, it doesn't matter. If your kids hurt, you're going to hurt, you know, you're going to have that empathy. You're going to have that, you know, fix it, you know, and it's like, I couldn't fix you kids because I was trying to fix myself.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's like when it comes to spirituality or your emotions or your mental status, you know, it's kind of like I just want to make sure that, you know, you kids are okay. Because, you know, in the long run, if and when my time comes, you know, you guys got to be left behind to deal with it, you know. And I think I just kind of like want to make sure that y'all are doing all right within yourselves, you know.
Well, I can't speak for anybody else, but I think I'm doing fine. But like,
that's good.
I can't speak for the other children.
Yeah.
I think that they may have struggled with it a little more.
Yes. Yeah. I do know that the older one did.
But I think that their struggle came from, maybe some guilt of, you know, like, maybe not being able to be as present as they would have wanted to be.
Yeah.
So they were struggling with it because they had to deal with it from a distance. I think being with you often during that time and me taking you to appointments and me spending time with you it helped because I was able to see like what your everyday life was like and what you were dealing with. And also, I don't think that it's fair to put my struggles, on you when you're already struggling. So I think that I'm not saying like don't feel your emotions, but like keep yourself in check.
Yeah.
Like it's just like,
and then don't be afraid to talk about it is my biggest thing, you know. And this is to help other people that listen to this podcast, you know, be able to communicate with your, you know, like your significant other or somebody else that you trust and, you know, you can rely on it to be able to work through whatever you're going through. And, you know,
yeah, there were times that I would leave here or drop you off after an appointment or whatever it was. There was times that I would leave and then I would cry.
Yeah.
But I never wanted to cry in front of you because
I was already crying.
You were already crying all the time about everything. So it was just like, so I would go home and I would talk to Andy about it and he would, you know, he would reassure me everything's going to be fine. And it was just like, I needed to release that, like, you know, like, and it was a frustrating period too, because I felt like I carried a lot of the burden. I felt like I was giving so much of myself, and not that I expected anything in return, but it was so exhausting and it made me so resentful of my siblings.
Well, and not only that, I'm sure you were resentful towards my ex right now.
No, I mean, not at the time I wasn't. No,
I mean, he was good caregiver. Don't get me wrong during the bad part of
it. No, I just mean, like, it was frustrating for me because, like, I was constantly here. And it's not that, I thought, you know, that they could do more. But it was like, where are you guys at when it comes to offering her any support? Mm-hmm. Because it's not like it almost felt like they couldn't even give you emotional support because they were too busy.
There was no phone calls. Even a phone call would have been much nicer. I know that the one that lives 4 or 5 hours away, he's like, I know he would try and call or text maybe every week. But once he started knowing that I was going to appointments, then he'd always call and say, when's your appointments? And, you know, and then that night he'd say, okay, what'd the doctor say? Yeah, he would do that. But, you know, it's different when they're texting than hearing their kids' voices and hearing the concern and the love that, you know, it's just, it felt really alone.
Mm-hmm.
But it even felt worse because it felt like, here I am. I just feel like I'm stuck. And, you know, a lot of people backed away from me, you know, friends, family. And it's kind of like, I just felt like, I had cooties, you know, you don't want to be around someone that's got cooties. And it's kind of like, it's a struggle. It is such a big struggle mentally and emotionally for me. And it's just, I just hate that alone. I mean, your family could be there, you know, but it's like, they're not. It's hard to explain.
Well, and I think that's what was so frustrating for me, is because here I was, like, giving everything I had. I mean, like, I had a family of my own. Like, mm-hmm. I was trying to, you know, take care of my kids and my husband and also be there for you. And it was just like, can I get a freaking hand here, like, can somebody, like, throw me a rope, like a life preserver, something, like, where are you? And it made me so mad at them, and I wanted to yell at them and cuss at them and be like, can you guys step your game up and just, like, freaking be there?
I remember when my oldest come in and sat with me, and I had just had a chemo treatment. I think it was like my third or fourth one, where they were starting to really, you know, take a toll on me. And I had gotten the shot, and it was like 2 days after that he came in to set with me because I couldn't be alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it scared him because he didn't realize that what impact that chemo had, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, I laid on the couch all day, you know, other than getting up to the bathroom. But, you know, it's like when he had to literally help me get to the bathroom, you know, to make sure I don't fall, I think it really set into his head that, oh, wow, you know. I mean, I could see it on his face. And that's when I knew that he was hurting, too, that he was struggling. And it's just...
And maybe it's just me being kind of, like... I don't know, I guess I can be a little judgmental with that stuff. But, like, I used to, like, just keep it to yourself. Like, honestly, like, it's so frustrating. Like, if you are sitting there watching your parent struggle to survive, like, you don't get to feel your emotions right now. You just don't.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel your emotions when you go home. But, like, you need to pull it together. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, be strong for them, or just get out of the picture. Because I don't think it's fair for you to have to feel a certain way about somebody else when you're already trying to deal with your own stuff. Like, I don't think it's okay. And that was my biggest problem. It was like, what are you guys going to do when she actually does die?
Oh, Lord.
What are you guys going to do? Here, I'm the youngest. And I'm going to be the one that's going to have to do everything because you two are over in a corner crying. Like, get your shit together. Let's get this figured out. Put her in the ground. And then in 3 days you can cry. Because I'm not, whatever you,
I don't want to be in the ground.
Whatever. But, like, I mean, like, I'm not, that's so shitty of me to say. I'm so sorry. Don't listen to me because that's my own personal opinion. But, like, I'm not going to say that when you are old and decrepit and 95 and pass away, or however old you're going to be, I'm not saying that I won't be upset, because I know I'll be upset. But I also know that I'm going to have to do things. Because it's not like some magical fairy sprouts out of the ground when you die and plans everything and gets everything in order. Like, that's not how it works. Like, you... There is a... I sound so robotic about it. There is a time and place. No, you should feel your emotions. I shouldn't say that, because they should feel their emotions. They should be whatever. But it's like they were already killing you off. And I was like, she's not even dying, you idiots. It's her medicine that's making her feel and look bad. Like, she's fine. Can you please stop crying about it and just help me out, please? It's just, it's like, imagine how, okay, imagine you're on, like, a raft and, or, like, you're on a small boat and, like, somebody splashes water in the boat and, like, they start panicking, thinking that the Titanic is sinking and really it's just a little bit of water. Like, that's how I feel like, okay, guys, the ship's not sinking. It's just wet. Like, calm down.
But those of you that are struggling with, the latter stages of cancer, you know, there are things that you can do. There's support systems that you can go to. Communication, ask questions. You know, it's the same as I had said in the earlier podcast, you know. It is going to be hard. You know, it's hard for everybody around the person that has it. Just find your resources.
Yeah.
That's a lot of it, is find the resources.
And everybody's cancer journey is different.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Luckily, we were able to catch yours pretty early on. And even though it was a really aggressive treatment.
Yeah.
You know, because it was like between stage 2 and stage 3, I think.
Yeah, it was like 2, but getting ready to tip over.
It was pretty close to stage 3, but... Because, I mean, and I say caught it early, but, you know, it wasn't the end of stage 4. Like, you know, it was...
Everything that got me to where I'm, to find out I got cancer was totally, and this is just my opinion, it was a God thing. Because circumstances, you know, when my doctor actually said, I don't know what's wrong with you, go over to the next town to the ER. And that's when they found everything. So, you know, it's kind of like... If anybody ever tells you that, go. I mean, because you just don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like I've been harping on my daughter about going and getting checked because I do have BRCA1 gene. And we're in the process of trying to get the genetic stuff taken care of, you know, with her getting tested to see if she has it. In turn, it can be passed down to my granddaughter.
Yeah.
And, you know, my daughter, she's had, you know, she's got the same... menstrual stuff that I had, and
okay.
And you know, this is podcast,
yeah,
whatever.
Well, you know,
but it can be hereditary is what I'm saying. It follows, the genes follow, and you know, it's like if you even suspect, you know, go get tested. The worst thing they can say is that, you know, you don't need to be tested, just do it. And you know, I think that with the way I am now, I've been so blessed that I've been in remission and just still dealing with the fatigue and everything. And, of course, it's getting funner to be playing with my daughter. We get to go do things and go out to eat. And
yeah, it's nice that you actually have some energy now and that you're not, you know, it was hard watching you, like, not do anything.
Right.
Like, it was...
It's, like, just nice to enjoy each other's company and talk and do things.
Yeah.
And it's, like, she's been a real pick-me-up for me in the last 2 or 3 months because, you know, I've been struggling with depression. And she's, like, really, she kind of gives me that oomph to get up and move and get going and doing what I need to do. And, you know, I can't be more grateful than what I am right now. But, I don't know. I just, on to a new chapter. We are going to do something a little bit different now. This is going to be our final podcast, not final podcast, but, you know, on cancer.
This is our last episode on cancer. We are past the cancer journey until further notice. We are crossing that bridge and leaving it behind us, moving on to bigger and better things.
Yep.
We got rid of baggage.
So we're going to move on, and we're going to do some, you ain't, it ain't no telling what we're going to be talking about the next episode. Yeah. So, stay tuned and, you know, peace out.
Yeah. Fuck cancer.